Hi, this is Matt, host of the Sequel Cast, and I just want to let you know in this episode of Sequel Commentary, ignore any references to the Bandcamp website. That was an experiment we tried at the time of recording this episode. So, but, you know, this is still like any other Sequel Commentary episode. It's an audio commentary for a movie, and this is also the debut of our brand new Sequel Commentary theme by Mark with a C. So, enjoy. This one's on Beverly Hills Cop 3. And I'll catch you around for one of the other SequelCast shows at sequelcast.com. Thanks.
We're going to talk about the movie, to talk about the movie, a sequel commentary. We're going to talk about the movie, to talk about the movie, a sequel commentary. Cue up the film in question, but don't start it yet. If you're not paused on four zeros, it's something you'll regret. Soon the singing will be stopping, and we're gonna get to talking on a basis that is voluntary. Then we'll talk over the movie, to talk about the movie, a sequel commentary. We're gonna talk over the movie, to talk about the movie, a sequel commentary.
I think this comes from me being a Star Trek fan, but I actually get, well, Star Trek and also classic Bob Hope, Bing Crosby road movie fan, but I get chills every time I see the Paramount logo at the beginning of a movie.
It's not a logo that's changed very much. I don't think they've replaced it with a CG mountain or anything.
They haven't made the mountain's boobs any bigger.
Right, so the movie stars Detroit, Michigan, Tuesday, 1:37 a.m. Lest you forget, the character of Axel Foley, who had been in the Beverly Hills Cop 1 and 2, of course, played by Eddie Murphy, is originally a cop from Detroit. And
which means that Judge Reinhold is actually the titular Beverly Hills cop.
You're right. And, you know, of course, we start with Eddie Murphy right now. When Eddie Murphy did Beverly Hills Cop 3, his career was kind of starting to be on the skids, right before Beverly Hills Cop 3, he did things like Another 48 Hours, Boomerang, and The Distinguished Gentleman, and like Harlem Nights. Some of those are attempts to do more serious films, apart from Another 48 Hours. And this, you know, when a star is down on his luck, the box office isn't coming quite as much as it used to, what do? Well, they make a sequel to an established franchise. It's a classic move. This actor right here, that is the boss of Axel Foley, is Inspector Douglas Todd, played by Gil Hill, and he's been in all three films, although he's not going to be in this film very long. And I think in real life he was an actual cop or something. So he's not he's not an actor by trade, but I think he's a lot of fun in this role, don't you?
He is. I mean, it's good to have familiar faces from the earlier movies. What I can't get over, though, is like how young Eddie Murphy looks. And also, this is before Eddie Murphy did a whole string of family films.
Yeah.
I actually prefer pre-family film Eddie Murphy to post-family film Eddie Murphy. That being said, the original, not the original, but the first Nutty Professor remake with Eddie Murphy is actually really, really good. I mean, he shows off so much of his comic skill, but I don't know. He's been in a lot of mediocre family movies recently, and I prefer the earlier version of Eddie Murphy.
I prefer the early funny ones, I think, is how Woody Allen phrased it in Stardust Memories.
When you start a movie with some people lip syncing and dancing. But it's not the best kind of comedy.
No, but it goes to say the director of this is a very famous and very decent comedy director, John Landis, who did movies from, like, Animal House to The Blues Brothers to...
Now, they've clearly been rehearsing this.
Right. But, I mean, John Landis is a well-known director, and he worked with Eddie Murphy before in Trading Places.
Hmm.
So...
That was a good movie. Yeah. But, actually... Look at this now. The people dancing while lip syncing to something, you usually only get that in romantic comedies or feel good comedies about a group of women. In the 90s, it was mandatory. If you had a comedy about a group of women, there had to be a scene where they all lip sync to some 1950s rhythm and blues song in a kitchen or in a living room, and somebody would use a hairbrush or a spoon
as a microphone. Yeah, or in the wedding, at a wedding, or in a car while driving. That's pretty common.
Janine Garofalo did a brilliant sketch about that on an old MTV movie awards, where her character was the woman who choreographs all those dance numbers. It was hilarious. I'm sure it's on YouTube. I'd definitely look it up.
Right.
No, Matt, it's probably been 10 plus years since I've last seen this. What the hell is going on?
So, at the beginning, Axel Foley is on a stakeout with some cops who are not, cops from earlier movies, it should be noted. And this angry white guy, he looks a bit how Patrick...
Property of U.S. government.
Yeah, how Patrick Bateman would later look in, like, American Psycho. He has that similar kind of smooth businessman look to him. But he's doing a deal with these bad guys to get some money, and they explain more of this later on. But...
Well, I mean, I know what where this is going to go, but I love that it's just the generic property of U.S. government. It's not property of State Department, property of Treasury Department. It's just general U.S. government.
So Beverly Hills Cop is always a mixture of comedy and action. Here you have some action starting with the...
Although not much of it. It's mainly people shooting at slow-moving targets.
Yes. But ironically, you have the music going on in the background.
I mean, I think there could have been a lot more comedy with gunning down a man with spray paint.
I've listened to shows that director John Landis has been on. He was on a really good episode of the Kevin Pollak Chat Show, which is a podcast that's I would highly recommend. And on the episode he's on, in which he speaks for like 2.5 hours, he mentions Beverly Hills Cop 3. It was a very difficult movie to do because at that time in his career, Eddie Murphy was kind of uptight, sort of stuck up. And when John Landis would suggest jokes or sort of improv stuff for Eddie Murphy to do in the set, Eddie Murphy would say, "Axel wouldn't do that." And so he was taking sort of a more family, even though this movie's rated R, he was kind of taking a less edgy, more family-friendly, sort of romantic leading man kind of part in this film. And you see there's more romance later on in this film developed than in some of the other ones with the Axel Foley character.
You know, that's something about comedic actors, because Eddie Murphy is a truly brilliant comedic actor. And lots of comedic actors have been able to do marvelous dramatic turns in various movies. John C. Reilly can do marvelous drama. Jerry Lewis can do marvelous drama. Jim Carrey can do marvelous drama. And I know that Eddie Murphy could do marvelous drama, but he's never gotten in the right vehicle for that. And I think at this point in his career, he was kind of realizing that he had never done that great serious film that would show that how much range he has. And I think some of that's bleeding over into his performance.
Mm-hmm. And you look around that same time, and, you know, an actor that was doing well in serious films that was also African-American was Denzel Washington, right? And in the interview on Kevin Pollak Chat Show, John Landis was saying that Eddie Murphy, his theory anyway, was that Eddie Murphy was thinking he should try and become the next Denzel Washington, or maybe was perhaps a bit jealous. So, I mean, that's all very interesting food for thought, but obviously the script for Beverly Hills Cop 3 isn't as good as some of the other movies, and apparently the original Beverly Hills Cop was heavily, heavily improvised on set.
Well, Eddie Murphy is a brilliant improviser. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't want to make his script too tight. You want to give him a chance to cut loose.
So
that is some real tough corrugated iron that this place is made out of. It apparently can deflect bullets.
So in the midst of the shootout, you got Douglas Todd getting in the action. It's his first action scene in the whole franchise, and soon to be his last. And, you know, he's a character that's a real hard ass, but deep down he loves Axel Foley. And this whole sort of money smuggling, whatever this thing is, ties into the plot later, but we just saw Inspector Todd get shot. A real weakness of this part of the movie, even though it's in Detroit, you don't recognize the cops he's with. It might have been kind of fun for a Beverly Hills Cop 3 if, you know, instead you would have had Judge Reinhold and all them come to Detroit on Axel Foley's home turf, and you would have had the California cops in Detroit and had the whole movie be about that. I think that might have been a more interesting idea.
Well, it would be, I mean, it would be a nice reversal of the movie's formula to have the cops from Beverly Hills come to Detroit for a case and then, you know, show Axel can show what he can do on his home turf. But, of course, that's not the direction they went into.
No, and there's several screenplays they developed, and a few of them dealt with would have take place in London, where Axel Foley would have been a fish out of water in New City instead of Beverly Hills. He would have been in London.
Beverly Hills, Bobby, it is.
And he would in one of them, he was supposed to team up with a character meant to be played by John Cleese as a British inspector.
I would see them in a comedy. I would love to see them playing off of each other.
And you know, that one never took off because I think Eddie Murphy ultimately wanted to have it filmed. It take place in California again, and they really had to cut the budget down on this one. So even though. I mean, you look at the screenwriter of Beverly Hills Cop 3 is Stephen E. D'Souza, who wrote things like Die Hard. And,
Now, right off the bat, I like that the car he commandeers for this chase sequence. I love that it's a car that's being worked on so that it's missing part of the chassis. That's a nice little bit of a nice little thing to keep the comedy momentum going. Although I got to admit, at this point, there's not that much comedy.
No, you're right. There's not that much comedy, and you think of the action scene in the first one, which, you know, Axel Foley's in a truck that's full of cigarettes, and he's kind of hanging on to the back, trying not to get knocked off, and sort of cracking jokes. And
there's a real chase scene cliche. In a chase scene, whenever something big falls off the car, they always cut to the person driving the car looking behind them. Because clearly, when you're pursuing someone and they're shooting at you, you want to pay attention to what's behind you.
Well, also that the front window gets cracked and you kick out the front window. That's another cliche you see a lot in chase scenes.
I don't see it that often. More often I see the window just explode. But, you know, we to each their own. Although I'm wondering, during this whole chase, I'm hoping he's trying to remember the license plate number of this car.
Right. I mean, he's angry because he's sort of getting revenge for his the inspector,
captain getting shot.
Whoop, Eddie Murphy just ran over a guy. He made it funny.
That's his response to crushing a man under the car.
Not again. It must be Tuesday. Mm-hmm.
I've lost track of how many times he's shot. Has he had a chance to reload his pistol?
Yeah, but this is not an action scene that screams Beverly Hills Cop. It doesn't have humor in it. It's not flashy. I mean, even Beverly Hills Cop 2, the second one, was directed by Tony Scott, and a lot of it was in daylight, had a real kind of slick look to it. This opening stuff in Detroit, it just, I don't know, seems a caliber down. You can tell the budget isn't quite what it should have been.
I'm immediately aware of how forgettable the song used in the chase sequence is. Now it does occur to me, he probably... Did we ever actually see him lose his badge?
No, I think he was undercover and he didn't have his badge on him and he was lying.
Yeah, but they weren't undercover, they just raided the place.
Yeah.
Now, here's another good question. Shouldn't... And we've talked about this in other movies, particularly in Die Hard, but with all the stuff that Axel's been through... Shouldn't he have enough notoriety that people remember him?
Well, the whole point is I believe those guys are FBI or something, it turns out later.
Well yeah, we know they're feds.
Uh-huh. So
you'd hope they would have done their homework.
All right, that they're not, you know, they have a whole separate sort of jurisdiction thing. But you know, again, sort of like the first film where Eddie Murphy's friend gets killed, right? And that sort of sets off the whole thing. In this one, it's the police captain getting killed.
Yeah.
So it's sad to see that character die. But again, the action and the comedy in the beginning is so pedestrian, it sort of paves the way for things to come.
Yeah, I actually find that this funeral kind of unbalances the movie. Like, I like that we get to see that Axel really cares about the guy who was shot, and, you know, I like that he's really mourning. I like that we get to see that tear. Oh, and a second tear. But at the same time, I'm also thinking, oh, Eddie Murphy should be in makeup playing the priest and also playing the guy singing a crazy version of Amazing Grace.
He played a priest in Vampire in Brooklyn, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a movie that did launch a franchise.
Nope. So, again, this setup is pretty similar to the movie. He's like, fuck it, I want to get the guy that killed my friend.
You know what also occurs to him? Axel got a really good look at the ringleader of this whole operation. And apparently he hasn't bothered to give a description to the police department that he works for.
Yeah, you'd think there'd be a scene in the police department where they're bringing up the computers, and even though they're Detroit cops, they're not, you know, as high budget as Beverly Hills cops. You'd think they could still kind of paint down where the guy is, and they're just saying that the stuff was from San Diego, California. And as we saw in the close-up with the towels earlier, it's at Wonder World, which is a parody of Disney World. So you think of, you know, what makes an R-rated action comedy cop movie hilarious? Let's set it in an amusement park. I think that the setting is just so lame. I mean, the poster is Axel Foley in front of a roller coaster saying, Axel's in for the ride of his life.
Well, you know, the thing is that there is a lot of comedic and action potential at an amusement park. It's loaded with people, a lot of them children, so right then and there, a lot's at stake if something dangerous starts going down. But, I think one of the biggest missteps in this film is... Up here we go.
The XLF theme, originally composed by Harold Faltermeyer.
You know, this is what's so awesome about this song is that it has a life outside of the movies. I mean, throughout the 80s, they used to play this song on the radio. Like, it was just like any other pop song out there, even though it was from the score of a film. Oh, but as I was saying, so the choice to set it in an amusement park, I think, is a good one. But I think one of the biggest missteps in this film is that they set it in a made-up amusement park, Wonderworld, that is apparently the amusement park avatar of a big media franchise, but it's a franchise that doesn't exist, so it's full of characters and concepts and intellectual properties that we just don't give a damn about.
And the weird thing is also, this film was by Paramount. Paramount owned a series of amusement parks called Busch Gardens, that I think are mainly located on the East Coast.
They also, actually, no, it's King's Dominion.
Yeah, no, I've been there once. Yeah, I guess that's what I'm thinking.
Yes, actually, so have I. I used to be in band in middle school and high school, and there was a, they sponsored a band competition.
But even though they have their own sort of amusement park, you know, they don't have mascots, really. Here's the return of Judge Reinhold as, what's the guy's?
Judge Reinhold.
As Billy Rosewood, who's now a sergeant. And
there's his Kevin McAllister moment.
Oh yeah,
but yeah, I mean, they should have set it in an existing amusement park. And if they're going to have costume characters, it needs to be cartoon characters we recognize. And you know, it doesn't have to be the Warner Brothers stable or anything like that. You know, they could have easily gotten the rights to use costume characters based on maybe Rocky and Bullwinkle or something. But you know, it. Because it's a fictional amusement park, we care so much less about it. Because it's not an amusement park our family could be at. It's not an amusement park where we could be at risk.
So let's talk about the lack of cast members returning in this one compared to the cast members that return in Beverly Hills Cop 2. And in this one, you know, you get Judge Reinhold back as Billy Rosewood, but you don't get John Ashton as John Taggart, and you don't get Ronnie Cox as Bogomil. The other two main guys from the Beverly Hills Police cop department.
Well, Bogomil was too busy trying to capture the Smurfs to be in this movie.
Or he was trying to get his ass off of Mars, I think. Trying to kill RoboCop. I don't know. But so instead, you just have Judge Reinhold, who's good, and he actually... I mean, this movie was made like 5 or 6 years after Beverly Hills Cop 2, and I think the actors still have aged pretty well. They still... I mean, Judge Reinhold has the boyish look on his face. And as you said, Eddie Murphy still looks pretty young. And,
Well, Judge Reinhold just has a perpetually youthful aura about him.
And so, instead, because they weren't able to get John Ashton as Taggart in the film, you have this guy right here, Hector Elizondo as John Flint, playing a very, you know, the role that's meant to be Taggart. And he's fine in the movie, but the whole time you're looking at him, you're like, it really should be Taggart and Rosewood going around.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you think those trophies are for? Well, I can see two baseball, what appears to be basketball.
Now, in Beverly Hills Cop 2, they set up that Billy Rosewood, played by Judge Reinhold, likes guns, but they don't look like shooting trophies. Because you remember he had the apartment with all the plants and all the Stallone posters and stuff.
Mm. Yeah, I think having a marksmanship trophy would have been a nice bit of character carryover from the previous film.
But I mean,
although here's a question: yeah. Why isn't his computer at his desk? Why is his computer on a little stand that's nowhere near a chair?
Well, computers and you know, the hard drives and the monitors and stuff weighed a lot more in 94 than they do now when you have iPads that just weigh a few pounds that can do a gazillion things. But it should be on his desk, right?
That computer looks to have been about 7 years out of date by 94.
It's probably a CGA monitor in delightful amber tones.
I tell you, the Amiga, that was a machine.
It was for the time, but back to Beverly Hills Cop 3...
You know, I also like on that computer, you can clearly tell it's not really a screen. It's just a plastic transparency with a screen print on it with a light behind it.
So there's one of the few wide shots you get here of Wonder World.
Hey, Alien Attack. That looks fun.
Well, maybe you'll see that later in the movie. Ooh.
I hope so. Actually, this looks like it could be the entrance to a King's Dominion. I don't know whether it actually
is. It might be a redressed King's Dominion. I'm not sure. Later in the film, they have sort of like a theme song to Wonderworld, like Welcome to Wonderworld or whatever. And the lyrics and music in that were written by the Sherman Brothers, who did music and lyrics for Disney classics like It's a Small World or Mary Poppins and all that stuff.
Which is a nice little carryover.
Mm-hmm. And they also have cameos in the film as well. And John Landis being the director, there's a lot of cameos from film directors in this movie. Including George Lucas in a small supporting part, which is pretty odd.
I like the Wonderworld map behind the woman at the ticket counter. I like that it does kind of look like that establishing shot of Wonderworld we saw. I see the volcano. I see the alien attack. I like those bits of details. It really helps reinforce the reality of the film.
I would have liked a scene in this film where maybe it was a commercial or a brief video explaining all the fun things to do at Wonderworld, set it up a bit more. Because you do get that wide shot establishing the different rides, but it doesn't feel really united. And, I mean, it's not as big of an amusement park as, like, a Disney World, like you said. But Disney World has the separate and even Universal Studios has the separate areas, whether this is, like, the Marvel superhero, this is the Harry Potter section, or this is the future section, this is the Mickey Mouse Village, or whatever.
Tomorrowland.
Yeah. And, you know, you don't get that real big sense of space, which is part of an amusement park, is that it's big. So
I'll say those ticket prices, outrageous.
What were the ticket prices?
It flashed by really quick, but I want to say it was like $34 for an adult.
What is it, like $100 now to get into Disneyland?
I don't know. I've never been.
Might be more. I've been to Disney World. I haven't been to Disneyland, but I do live on the West Coast.
Closed for renovation in the Happy Forest. They're laying some pipe.
So here, this sets up something. Uncle Dave, who is the Walt Disney kind of character behind the park, But again, they don't really set him up. You just see this like little photo. They could have done a little bit more character development to make you care about these characters later on.
I do like the design of these characters, actually. They do have a sort of a classic cartoon character shape and bounce to them. So that provides, you know, a certain amount of realism. Although the designs aren't as polished as I'd like to see them, but keep in mind I studied cartooning extensively in college.
Right. And Axel Foley sneaking into the secret door on the tree. And a sort of running gag is,
I like,
as
there's an enchanted corporate office sign on the tree.
And, you know, in this whole theme park thing, you get the running gag of the security guards are trying to catch him. But this also gives you an excuse, oh, this is a much lower budget set. You're in an empty corridor.
That's one thing, because like the offices and lounges at Disney World for the employees, the entrances to those are actually really well hidden. But in this universe, I like that they just lampshade it. There's a tree with an enchanted corporate office on it.
So you want to tell your alien attack story, Thrasher? What is the robot as the logo actually supposed to have been from?
Well, it's anyone who knows science fiction from the 80s, it looks a hell of a lot like a Cylon from Battlestar Galactica, and we're about to see here that it is in fact a Cylon from Battlestar Galactica. But what I love, though, is that even in the 90s, the Cylons were still getting work. You know, a lot of people think that they just left show business after Battlestar Galactica, but no, they didn't. They were still, although. Oh my god, no, that's not a Cylon. That's a cheap replica Cylon.
It's not the actual Cylon outfit?
No, it's not the actual Cylon.
It's pretty damn close.
No, it's not. Like, I will, on the Sequel Cast blog, I will do a damned point-by-point liquid gas. Liquid gas, that's a bit oxymoronic. But I'll do a point-by-point breakdown of the original Cylon designs and these things, because they're not the same thing. Although, here's a bit of a fun thing. This ride they're in is actually a real attraction at Universal... I believe it's in Universal Studios.
Is it the Earthquake attraction?
Park. Yes, an Earthquake simulation. They pretty much just ran the whole Earthquake ride, but they put some Cylons in it. Although, this means that Uncle Dave, at some point, produced a science fiction movie called Alien Attack.
Well, you know, after Star Wars, Disney made films like The Black Hole, and there was a James Bond film, Moonraker. You know, everyone was trying to compete after science fiction became wildly successful.
Yeah, I guess, like, I like to, in my head, I like to imagine the whole mythology and history behind Uncle Dave.
This music is just the worst.
Yeah, well, this music would have been subpar for video games.
Well, you know, yeah, it does sound like shitty video game music, but I do want to point out, Harold Faltermeyer did the Axel F theme, bom, 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 bom. But the music in this one, in the film, is done by Nile Rodgers, and Faltermeyer did music for the first two Beverly Hills Cop films, so it often sounds cheesier.
Oh, I'm already sick of that song.
It's by the same people that did It's a Whole New World. There's George Lucas.
That whole attraction is apparently just somebody's model railroad.
Called Spider, that's a real clever name. There's old George Lucas, director of Star Wars, in the yellow sweatshirt.
I really feel like he should be there with Linda Ronstadt. I know they weren't dating at the time, but...
No, not at this time.
Just, you know, get two cameos.
Such a happy, happy train.
Now apparently that means it screamed when he stepped on it. That meant there was a tiny little park employee in that car and they just murdered him.
So if you watch the scene, you can see the really obvious blue screen here. When they're on the ride. The spider.
Clearly not qualified to operate the mechanism there.
Well, these security guards are very violent and not subtle. Like... And they don't have memorable personalities either. It's not like they make jokes with each other. There's no character moments between the little thug bad guys.
Oh, you know what? I don't think that's blue screen. I think that's rear projection.
Oh. Yeah?
now that I look at it, you know, I think Axel was, like, I know Axel was just trying to, like, trick them into letting him get on the ride, but I'm pretty sure that ride is unsafe, judging by the way it's responding.
It's certainly unsafe when you use a gun and shoot the control panel. Code red on the spider.
Yeah, that's gonna solve your access problem real quick. I think there's a Wonder World symbol, or a Wonder World alert, but it's only a Wonder World alert.
That's the only alert they have in the whole Beverly Hills cop station.
Yeah.
Just for, you know, I have a feeling Rosewood uses that all the time as a cover to go to Wonder World while on duty.
Now, okay, it is a little bit hokey, but I do like the use of the falling stuffed animal to show exactly what's at stake.
You got
to
show a sense of scale. Although, I mean, it's a, I mean, okay, so this shit, don't get me started. So this is very much like a video game. He's hopping between different sections of the ride, or stunt double.
And there's that repetitive synth music.
Oh, Jesus.
You know what occurs to me? Is he taking the long way around?
I think you're right. He is taking the longest way possible. But, like, it's not even filmed in a way that it's suspenseful.
I will say this stunt double is pretty convincing as Eddie Murphy.
Yes.
Except for that one shot right that we just saw.
It's a different hairline, but yeah.
I like that they're helping him.
I like how that rabbit looks stoned, the orange one.
Well, the rabbit looks like he has a real shit-eating grin on his muscly, rabbity face.
So, I mean, this scene could have been shot in a way to make it suspenseful. You could have had comedy stuff happening. You could have had him being shot while he's on the ride. It could have been security guards jumping on the thing after him. But instead, no, it's nothing. It's just him hopping around, and there's the stuff with the heights. But it's not that action-packed.
Well, like, I'm immediately thinking that, you know, I was thinking things we didn't see much of Eddie Murphy actually in the ride. I'm thinking he's like B.A. Baracus, like, I don't like carnival rides, okay? Oh, look, a glass of milk.
I mean, that, it could have been a joke, too, but, I mean, like, don't you think there's still a lack of jokes in this film, Thrasher?
Yeah, there haven't been jokes, quips, there hasn't been much comedy. Okay, no, that's really unsafe.
Well, both the gears all flipped around. Now they're stuck.
Hey, the rabbit must have gone off.
Superman bullshit. You can't make that jump. I think this possibly might be the worst music score ever made.
Is he trying to give them a jump start with that cable?
He's trying to do an Indiana Jones.
Now, how did he tie that? Like, there's no indication that he actually tied that to make it secure. He just casually wrapped it around.
But this is not a suspenseful scene, and it's taking forever.
Well, you know what it is? He's clearly not hanging from the rope. He's clearly just standing on an apple crate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, those kids have good upper arm strength for the whole 10 minutes it took Axel Foley to go and rescue him.
Now, like, looking at it, wouldn't the kids be a hell of a lot safer if you just used that cable to reinforce the ride and then wait for it to get started so they could bring him down or send up a fire ladder?
I think so. I mean, Indiana Jones, he's not.
You know, I will say, like, I don't know if I've talked about this on the show before, but I always get really weirded out when children are in danger in films. Like, I won't say that it disturbs me, but it's a real quick way to get me invested if I see children in danger in a movie. And I gotta admit, I am now getting real swept up in the action now that you know, some children's safety is at stake.
I mean, it's a very manipulative thing to do as well.
Yeah, but I think the real problem building up to this is that we didn't see him. It's like we spent so much time focusing on Axel, I completely forgot that there were any children in danger.
Yeah.
Let's watch it, kids.
Whoa. Ugh. And of course, now they still try to get him after he rescues two kids. I think the security guys give him a break.
You'd hope. What kind of mouthwash do you think this guy uses?
Now, that actor's not Michael Ironside, but is he the guy from Enter the Dragon? Is he John Saxon?
I don't think so, but he's very Ironsides-esque.
He has that steely look about him.
Okay. For an amusement park founded by a guy who's a brilliant cartoonist, they have some shittily designed offices with some shitty artwork on the wall.
It just shows the lower budget on this film. I mean, it's all concrete. It's boring to look at.
Well, the whole layout screams either supervillain or robber baron. Good old-fashioned VHS. You know, I imagine when Eddie Murphy walks around, he just whistles the Beverly Hills Cop theme.
You know, I'm correct. That guy who's, That guy right there with the glasses, that is John Saxon.
Oh, nice.
Who not only was, one of the leads in Enter the Dragon, but he also played the part of, the father in some of the Nightmare on Elm Street films, as the father of Heather Langenkamp. So he's a veteran character actor, and the one time martial artist. He's one of the other bad guys here at the
receptionist
amusement park.
The receptionist. I don't know if they're going to cut back to her, but she has some really ugly tchotchkes on the shelf behind her. They're just generic glass shapes.
Well, there's a whole kind of romance thing between her and Axel Foley, if it's the same person I'm thinking of.
No, I was talking about the receptionist. I wasn't talking about the ride person.
Oh, I'm sorry. Gotcha.
But the whole receptionist area, it looked like a very lazy production designer was given the task, design a sci-fi receptionist area.
You know, I think
so they put some triangles and squares behind it.
I mean, the budget of this was, I believe, almost like cut in half right before filming. So it was supposed to have a lot more detailed action sequences on these different rides than we ended up getting, and they had to kind of make do the best with what they had. And it really shows, I think. Because, like you said, the potential for amusement park fun scenes is there, but we're over half an hour into this movie now. And, nothing really exciting has happened. Nothing that funny has happened.
I don't get the feeling that the plot's really been advanced.
No.
Or that a story has been told. That is a cute tree, yeah. Now, I like to imagine that this bar is also in Wonderworld, but I'm pretty sure it's not.
It could be. You know, they got bars in Disney World. The parents got to take their kids and pay $10 for a pina colada.
That's why I always bring my own booze. And I'm very serious.
In a flask?
Yeah, I've got a marvelous flask. It was a gift from a marvelous friend of mine, Joshua Broussard. Has Cthulhu Fatagan engraved on the side.
What do you get in the flask? What do you bring in the flask? Is it vodka usually, or is it?
Usually vodka, sometimes infused, sometimes not, sometimes scotch if it's available. And it's nice to have. I do my own ginger vodka from time to time.
Nice.
It's good to have with me. It got Mike and I through the 2005 Annie Award ceremony. A good ceremony, though. I got to see Dave Arneson get his Lifetime Achievement Award. That man earned it, ladies and gentlemen.
Sure. I do want to point out, in this scene, sort of exposition about the bad guy and stuff, if this would have been in any of the other Beverly Hills Cops movies, it would have been in a strip club.
You know, you're
because
right,
the first movie, they're in the strip club, and the second film, they're in the Playboy Mansion.
Yeah, well, you know, looking at the scene, like it's like a Hawaiian-themed bar. You know, a real sort of parrot head, Jimmy Buffett type location. But yeah, there's a perfect opportunity for a lot of cheap sex and titillation, and they're not.
I mean, you could do a joke where the waitress has the coconuts, bra on her breast, and when to feed him the cocktail, she takes the coconuts off her breast and feeds him the drink in the same coconut that was on her breast. I don't know. That's the kind of joke I do. Very breast focused.
That wouldn't be a bad routine. I mean, that sounds like the kind of a house drink gag I'd come up with.
Yeah.
Then they, of course, they couldn't call it a coconut teaser because that was a copyrighted drink. But they could come up with a good name for it—the coconut milk or something.
Coconuts. Oh, Uncle Dave, going to meet Axel Foley in his hotel room.
I like that he doesn't put the gun down.
Yeah.
Coke, Diet Coke. I like that Axel clearly likes Uncle Dave, and he does have the look of kind of a beloved kind of whimsical childhood hero sort of figure. But at the same time, to get the audience to care about Uncle Dave, they really should have laid Uncle Dave in a lot earlier.
Yeah, like I said, some commercial about the park or some brief news story or documentary, like a brief like A&E biography style thing, could have set up him and could have set up the park.
Well, that's too expositional, but what I would do, because when during that opening car sequence, when the car Eddie Murphy stole finally is busted and he meets the feds, that's actually in front of a theater. There's a theater marquee there. I mean, they could have had posters for the newest Uncle Dave movie. You know, just something to make us care a little bit more. Good penmanship.
Mm.
Now, here's a question. Do you think when he was born, he was christened Uncle, or do you think that's just kind of a beloved title?
Well, speaking of Disney stuff earlier, I do want to point out the actor that plays Uncle Dave, Alan Yun, did the voice of Scrooge McDuck for several years for Disney.
Very nice. So. Well, I guess in a way, then, it's kind of a coup to get him. And Scrooge McDuck is truly one of the great American characters.
So you have this corruption going on at Wonderworld, and their Uncle Dave, they're kind of using as a figurehead, but he's not really creatively involved with the park or his company anymore.
I like that somehow they were able to force him out of his own company based on his IPs, but they still keep him around. That's evil. Again, laying in some more pipe, the Okie Dokie Shuffle.
Who could forget the Okie Dokie Shuffle?
That is a well-hidden metal detector there. Smith and Wesson. You want both.
So what is this? Is that a security convention now?
Yeah, the private security convention. No, there's Red Man, so the one behind him must be Method.
Oh, Man. Here's the return of Surge.
Played by Pinchot.
Bronson Pinchot, who was in the first film but not in the second. It's really nice to see him return. You don't get that many characters returning from the other film, so.
Also, Bronson Pinchot really is a charming comic actor and a wonderful improviser. I think Perfect Strangers had been off the air for a year or two when this came out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's done a whole lot since Perfect Strangers. I mean, he had a funny small part in a Quentin Tarantino written film called True Romance. I don't think I've seen him in anything for decades, really.
You know, I'm immediately now thinking of all of Bronson Pinchot's bafflingly horrible career choices, such as appearing as the lovable alien in Mego. Yeah, it was kind of a warmed-over Mork and Mindy premise, but with Bronson Pinchot as the alien.
Wow.
Another misstep, calling him Mego, which is one of the most horrifying creatures in the Cthulhu mythos.
This scene is some of the only comedy that I thought was funny in the movie.
Well, they do play pretty well off each other. I'm immediately invested in their relationship, however brief it's going to be. Although, that red suit, I think that's what you wear when you're training attack dogs.
I think
that's
right.
Foam. That's not going to stop a bullet.
It's not that high-tech looking. I mean, I did take sort of different forms of martial arts when I was younger, and we did wear something similar to that when we did sparring.
Survival boutique. That's delightful. It's kind of a 1980s David Brenner hairstyle going on.
I think so, and just the...
Oh, what are you drinking right now?
I was drinking some vodka. I walked to the liquor store and was getting some bottom shelf, but just trying a different brand, and I just, was trying to save some money and got... I think it was Oregon Springs vodka or something. It was $7 for a bottle, so it's not high-class stuff.
Yeah, I'm enjoying some, I'm enjoying a mix of Dr. Pepper and whiskey.
Ooh.
Yeah, I find it helps to get through some of these audio commentaries. Not that they aren't a joy to do, just the movies themselves aren't necessarily a joy to watch. And it's good to drink something that gets my tongue more wagging than it already is.
So as we see in this film, Bronson Pinchot is really kind of playing the cue to Axel Foley's James Bond.
I do kind of like that. And it's just funny you pointed that out. It's the first time I noticed it. He is fulfilling that action movie role. Although looking it over, I suspect that Axel isn't going to walk out of here with a backlog of gadgets that he's going to use throughout the rest of the movie. They don't have the budget for
him. He gets a few, but yeah, they're very low-tech gadgets. So he gives them this little keychain that does a flashing light.
The Stunner. Actually, you know what? I was actually doing some house cleaning at the very beginning of the month. And I found a box that has my girlfriend's old taser from when she was in college in it. And I gotta say, the battery's still charged, and it makes a terrifying sound.
Wow.
Like, when you turn it on, it just... this. So, I was very tempted to see how it felt, but after hearing that noise, I put it back in the box.
So this is some setup for this Annihilator 2000 weapon that Axel Foley gets. That's just... the size of it is just ridiculous.
I gotta say, this promotional video isn't that crazy.
It has a cell phone, it has a microwave, it has night vision goggles.
Well, the technology incorporated into this weapon is just preposterous, but it's some gadget comedy. It's just this promotional video with the sexy ladies caressing guns. Such promotional videos exist.
Well, it's a little bit like a joke Quentin Tarantino did later in Jackie Brown, where it has a Chicks with Guns gag starring Demi Moore.
Those videos also exist. a lot like Bambi hunting. I don't know if anybody remembers that from what 10+ years ago. That was a real thing. It just wasn't what was reported.
I've never seen the American flag look so nice.
I have, but I was saluting it. That I would salute.
So how much do you think a gun would weigh from the early 90s that had a microphone, a boombox?
Apparently two barrels for firing two different calibers of ammunition. No place to put that ammunition. That's got to weigh a hell of a lot. That's got to weigh at least as much as a boombox, and those were heavy. It weighs as much as two well-fed babies, I'm going to say. That's how I measure things. By how many of what kinds of babies it weighs.
I would have liked to see Bronson Pinchot in the movie more. That's a really fun scene. I think it's the highlight of the film for me.
I want to see Sacha Baron Cohen and that fat guy come running naked through this scene.
It's a bit like that. In fact, you know, if they were ever to do a Beverly Hills Cop remake, they could do Sacha Baron Cohen in the Surge role.
Yeah, I could see them doing that. Not that I necessarily want to see it remade. I mean, Eddie Murphy's pretty much got a lock on the game.
We can talk about that for a second. So a few years ago, in like 2010, Eddie Murphy was trying to get a Beverly Hills Cop 4 made, and they had a few screenplays written up, and Brett Ratner, director of Rush Hour 1, 2, and 3, was all set to direct it. And then things fell through. They couldn't quite get the financing together. There was a writer strike going on at the time. And the current plan, Eddie Murphy claims, is to develop Beverly Hills Cop into a TV series where it's about Axel Foley's son, and Eddie Murphy will do cameos in it. So I could see Beverly Hills Cop working well as a TV series, but we'll see if that actually gets off the ground.
You could do a fun procedural, but would every episode have to be about a cop from Detroit going to Beverly Hills? Would every episode open with a convoluted reason why he would go to this other part of the country?
Ideally, it would set certain episodes in different cities, maybe to mix things up, or maybe he just permanently gets stationed in Beverly Hills. I don't know.
That's true. He could have gone out there, and that's where he got a job in a police.
So here at this award ceremony, villain Ellis DeWald is getting Man of the Year award. But there's actually something a lot more sinister, because Eddie Murphy knows this is the guy that shot Inspector Todd, his beloved boss.
Now, Matt, what do you think private law enforcement is?
Something like Blackwater on a smaller scale. I don't know.
Because it just, like private law enforcement just kind of suggests that somebody makes up a law, but then hires his own police force to enforce it.
I mean, what it makes me think, in Portland, Oregon, where I live, we have a lot of rent-a-cops instead of real cops around the city. And I think maybe that's a bit like private law enforcement, where I don't think they have weapons on them, really, but they're made to look
good
like
to
they have
know.
Weapons, and it's very bizarre. So this
and
is another thing.
Here we have the overbearing Axel starting to come out. No, I like it. When
you get
Axel
one of these
scenes.
This is sort of a theme, a scene that runs in all these movies, in which he acts like he knows someone to get into a hoity-toity place.
Then barges into something and kind of totally takes it over with the force of his personality.
He acts like he owns the place.
I gotta say, I love Eddie Murphy's grin. It's like a perfect asshole grin.
Yep.
But it's the kind of asshole that can do a good job.
And so he's not getting escorted off the stage.
Master of camouflage. That's a weird little reaction shot there. Gets good eyebrow acting on all the people standing in the background of the stage.
I mean, this is one of the few comedic scenes where Eddie Murphy seems to be having fun in the movie. And a lot of the rest
of it... He's probably improvising.
I think you're probably right, yeah.
Which is good, because no one else in the scene really gets any lines. So either they don't have any, because they know Eddie's going to improvise, or they have them, but Eddie's just not giving them a way to use them.
Well, the scene is too long to begin with. It's just sort of a scene to have Axel Foley set up DeWald, kind of screw him over. Whoop.
He
socks him in the face.
His teeth isn't nearly as subtle as anyone thinks.
No. Near here, the security guards go, and Judge Reinhold's trying to...
It's a private security conference with only two security guards.
It's not that many.
Old-timey car phone. Hey, a lady! The person who drew that over the prison phone is actually pretty talented. It's good proportions on the figure.
You don't see good proportions nowadays.
Well, not on prison graffiti.
So how do you think in this film Thresher that Hector Elizondo does in kind of the pseudo Taggart role?
He's doing all right.
He gives it his best.
What I'm saying, if I was ever in prison, I think I would just have people smuggle in ballpoint pens, and I'd use them to draw these amazing murals on the prison walls.
So that guy, who's letting him out of jail is played by Joe Dante.
Yeah, I'm just noticing the actual cop from Beverly Hills can't get out of prison in Beverly Hills. The guy way out of his jurisdiction can. Now, why are there two jackets on the wall if this is only one guy's office?
You know, I think one's a rain jacket for the 2 days out of the year it rains in L.A. Again, it's surprising nobody knows who Axel Foley is until after he kind of causes a scene.
That plant up there has to be plastic. There's no plant could survive in this dry, airless, waterless environment. This is a room that just drains life force.
I mean, we're over halfway through this movie. Nothing about the way it's filmed looks like a movie. It looks like it's filmed like a TV show.
It almost has a procedural feel.
Shot compositions. And, you know, part of that, I'm sure, has to do with the budget sort of stuff. And also, John Landis isn't a huge action director, but he did direct An American Werewolf in London and also wrote that.
That's fantastic.
Which, yeah, is a real classic film.
I mean, he can direct some pretty kinetic action-packed stuff. It's just not quite coming over in this film. But he's very much a craftsman, though. It's entirely possible that he did not have the time or the resources to really craft this movie.
No, he did not. I mean, this was very much sort of a, you know, studio job where he's doing it for the studio, he needed a paycheck, and there's nothing wrong with that, but it's not a personal project. It was not a personal project for Landis.
I like that he's got a cap. Judge Reinhold has the cap from his department. Or his special office.
Acronym humor, so funny, except it's not.
No, give it a chance. It'll pay off. So it looks like they're going to a place as far away from Wonderworld as possible.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's some well-funded lifeguards.
It's just trying to show how much of a command the Reinhold character has. How much he's grown in his position from the first film. But again, I'm not really sure why they're doing this. I guess they found out a truck was...
Isn't that the truck from the opening, but repainted? Repaired and repainted?
It's empty. It's decoy.
Although that in itself is suspicious. Just an empty moving van at the beach. Or an empty transport van. Shipping van. Whatever kind of van.
But yeah, it is the repainted truck because they're investigating. You don't get to see Axel Foley do a lot of detective work in the police station. So that's a bit different.
Well, wait a minute. Look at those badges in the back, or the patches in the background. Doesn't one of them look like it's one of, like some of them look like they have the shapes of states?
It could be that Billy Rosewood, played by Judge Reinhold, has a badge collection from all the different national parks. I don't know.
He didn't earn the badges. He just collects the badges.
Again, that could have been a visual joke, a close-up or something of some weird collection he has.
Yeah, it's just that one of the badges, it's like, I think the third one down, second in, looks like it's in the shape of Louisiana. You see that?
I do. Counterfeit bills.
You're giving us a good long look at the bills there.
You know, I think with certain cop movies in the 80s or 90s, if the plot wasn't about cocaine, it was about counterfeit money.
Sometimes it was about assault weapon smuggling.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. It was a common thread. That's a menacing photo of Axel.
We're looking for the only black man in the park. Reason. Oh, this business is so stupid. Yeah.
Could that be Axel?
I wonder. Oh, he has a big bottom. That's pretty funny.
So where do you think he got the costume? Do you think he rented it from a costume house, or do you think he broke into the park again and immediately stole it?
Well, he has a hookup going on with the security lady that works there.
Now, normally the people in the costumes don't talk.
I think they're contractually not supposed to.
Okay, now, right off the bat, two problems. One...
It's in close-up on the face.
We don't get to see... Yeah, it's a close-up of the face. We should be seeing his whole body attempting to do the shuffle. Two, if for a guy who really loves Uncle Dave, he apparently knows nothing about the cartoons. Although, how do you think the elephant got the name Okie Dokie? Do you think that's just, like, what the character says all the time, or,
I think you're right. It's probably a catchphrase, Okie Dokie. But you get the setup for that gag with Judge Reinhold doing the shuffle, but it's a throwaway line, and I don't know. And again, it's shot in a close-up on the face.
We sort of see the shuffle. Now, okay, this doesn't work for me with them having the masks on while they're on their break. Those costumes are fucking hot. You want your mask off when you're on your break. They should all have Eddie Murphy's voice. It should just be a coincidence that all the Okie Dokies have Eddie Murphy's voice.
I think
there we go.
I admit it's kind of funny with Eddie Murphy's head on top of this big cartoon body.
Well, that was before he started wearing fat suits and everything. I think this is where he got the idea. He's like, oh, this, I like this suit. This is kind of freeing. I kind of feel like who I really am on the inside.
And then for a Nutty Professor, and what was the other one? Norbit?
Yeah, Norbit. He did a fat suit in that. The two Nutty Professor movies, of course. I bet there's another. If we dig around, we'll find another movie he did a fat suit.
Coming to America, he did a lot of the makeup stuff, but I don't think there was a fat suit. But there might have been one in A Vampire in Brooklyn.
Actually, yeah, wasn't the preacher he played a bit overweight? Kind of
possibly. I've not seen that movie in
Let's say that it was. So yeah. Of course, I imagine that Eddie Murphy to get off, he needs to wear a fat suit in this weird psychosexual fantasy. I like to imagine the fetishes of the stars.
So, of course, in the plot, they're investigating the mysterious forest ride that's closed and what possible stuff could be hidden there. So she tears off this original part of these plans for the map. Couldn't she have made a copy?
She should have been able to make a copy.
Because then they're going
to
see, the map got ripped.
Or she could have just, sketched out on a sheet of paper the information he needed.
Yes, that would have made more sense as well.
Because really, that actually looks like a really official document. I mean, that looks like official plans you would have to have on file.
Do you think this flirtation between the two characters is working here? I mean, there's a big age difference.
Well, that's always happening in American films. No matter who the male lead is, whoever the forced romantic interest is, has to be young, has to be super attractive. And it really kind of gets to me. Like, I know I've known... There's lots of different ways to be attractive. I see nothing wrong with giving him a more age-appropriate romantic interest. You know, let's have a movie where the male lead is in a relationship with somebody who isn't 20 years his junior.
I'm just thinking of... what was that one where Sean Connery and Catherine Zeta-Jones?
Was that The Rock?
Nope.
Entrapment.
Entrapment, right.
Entrapment is what cops do to criminals. This is called blackmail.
Yeah, so I mean, that's like an example of something that's a huge age difference. And you know, there are people in real life that have big age differences in their relationships, but a lot of times...
Oh, I know what can happen. It's just disproportionately represented in films,
right,
for a lot of what I suspect are sort of old-timey sexist marketing reasons. I mean, frankly, you don't really even need a romantic interest for Eddie Murphy.
I like the creepy old man face.
That is the most terrifying train. That is the most terrifying train I've ever seen. That is a train that eats people.
I'd like to see that character. The talking old man whose face is forever trapped in the...
Old Gus head of the train.
Of a train. Help me, I'm stuck. I can't choose my destiny.
I want to go off the rails.
So you have this sort of exciting music playing, but nothing's exciting is happening. He's spying on, they secretly are printing counterfeit bills in the back of this closed ride at the amusement park. Isn't that scandalous?
No.
I think that the stakes should have been up a bit more. Recall in Beverly Hills Cop 2, the whole thing was like an ABC murder going on.
Yeah.
Where people were getting killed left and right. And
really?
In the first film, it was, I think, drug dealing going on in a art gallery kind of or something, right?
Something like that, but these people are sitting on top of a media entertainment empire, and yet they apparently need to counterfeit money. Like, why?
Yeah.
They must be making plenty of money. Honestly, why do this? Are they just inherently crooked, or are they running this media empire to the ground? And this is their desperate scheme to stay afloat. It just seems kind of forced. I don't buy why people who already have a lot of money would want to.
Do you like the music here? That's an arrangement of the Axel F theme with brass.
It's got a bit more pep and pop to it, but I still prefer the original.
The electronic
Axel
one, yeah. It sounds a bit like a high school band arrangement. Here's another obnoxious song.
I like the guy with the turban. Like, I like that they get all kinds of different people in this amusement park. I like that it's inclusive. Now, why it connects to this... I really feel like he should be... He should have started his shtick a little earlier, although why he doesn't just get off the stage.
Yeah, well, he's Axel Foley. He's a ham.
I like that the people in the costume...
It's quite the dance he's
doing. I like that the mariachi fox, his hell head was clearly about to come off right there.
It's clearly a code message.
No, Tiny Town isn't nearly as small as the name would imply.
Oh, that's a...
Okay, that's terrifying.
That's a terrifying purple gorilla in the background.
No, I like that Axel is not willing to take the one step back to get out of that kid's reach.
I remember this movie was made in the early 90s, so people didn't really have cell phones, or if they did, they weren't very common.
Pardon.
So he has to use a payphone.
Now, why is the phone attached to that character's nipple?
Because the nipple offers the best reception. So he's talking to Agent Fulbright, his contact in the feds.
Ah, the frightening security apparatus in which he lives.
Whoa.
No, I like that no one else responds to that gunshot.
What if they shoot when there are a bunch of customers there too? Like if Axel Foley was there after hours, that might be more believable. They'd be shooting at him.
That bullet could have hit one of the seven people that was standing behind Axel.
So, I mean, this isn't suspenseful. This is just lame. He's on a merry-go-round. Like it was like 2 miles an hour, if that.
I mean, frankly, I want to see him getting into another character costume to hide.
Yeah, that would have made sense.
They really just ought to station someone at Wonderworld to be their Axel response guy. I think I just saw some cable stuck down with gaffer's tape.
Could be.
That's not up to code. Okay, so Tiny Town is apparently no different from the rest of the amusement park.
Yet again, he's surrounded.
But wait, there's a ride behind him. Could he jump into the ride to escape?
Bum-bum.
No, apparently not.
Oh, there.
Oh, now they respond.
Shoot a gun in an air. And he does that because he sees a guy is videotaping, I think.
Well, I like the guy videotaping does not stop.
Size of the camcorders back then. Jeez.
He's that committed. But here's the thing. That guy doesn't have a wife and kids with him. That means he's just walking around the amusement park recording things. That's creepy.
That happens.
Who does that?
Creepy people.
Well, okay, there you go. There have been a couple of fuck yous in this, but really not enough, I feel, to justify the R rating.
At the time, I don't think they really let you say fuck in PG-13 movies like they do now. You can get away with it a few times. But you're right, this isn't as much of a rated R. I think today this probably would be rated a PG-13 or something, I think, except for the... Even with the fucks on there.
Even the violence is pretty mild, yep. Except for that shootout at the beginning where we saw a bit of blood.
But it was a bit of blood. It wasn't tons of blood.
Yeah. Well, a human body doesn't have that much blood in it, really. See, this is when they discover that the love letter is actually written on the will that was written in R.K. Maroon's Disappearing Reappearing Ink. I'm sorry, I'm imagining a better movie.
Yeah. You know, this all this stuff in the amusement park reminds me a bit of the action scenes in the climax of the third Crocodile Dundee film, Crocodile Dundee in L.A.
Now, why are there two Happy Forest labels on that door?
I don't know, but it's an excuse to show off another concrete set. Boy, these are visually exciting.
It's just a real department of redundancy department thing.
Like, have this movie shot in a warehouse, I swear to God. And, I mean, a lot of movies are shot in warehouses on sound stages, but there's very little set decoration. It just looks cheap. Oh, ah, ha, ha, they were filming out Wally Bucks.
No, I like that Uncle Dave isn't on the money.
Wonderworld dollars.
Wonderbucks is a better name.
Yeah. Well, now Axel has egg on his face.
I like they changed the visual matrix, not they switched the print.
They switched out the graphic.
Like, ridiculously high tech. I don't know anyone who says visual matrix.
Couldn't the security guards get arrested for public endangerment for firing weapons in a park? I guess maybe not, because that's their job, isn't it?
Well, if they're it depends. I guess it depends whether they're licensed to discharge the firearms and whether or not anyone is harmed by the discharge of the firearms. Like when they shot Axel at the phone booth for. Which is like, if they shot Axel at the phone booth, that means all the guests are going to see. If they had hit, all the people in the park are going to see somebody's head explode when he gets hit by the bullet. But you know, if they shot a guest, I don't think they're going to get away with it.
So
I guess the owners of the amusement park could dump a bunch of cash on the person who got shot to try to do some sort of settlement so they don't press charges. But I don't know.
So now it looks like things are going poorly for Axel. He blew the cover of the FBI guys following around villain.
Okay, too many scenes of people in cars.
Yes.
Now, we now know there's another car, but we know nothing about where it exists in the universe in relation to this car. Bicycle Shack. So I'm fascinated with stores and things in the background. Like, all this movie needs... Oh, Gunga Din. All this movie needs is a person in rainbow suspenders holding a sign that says, "Put me in your movie," walking around in the background.
One of the many weaknesses in Beverly Hills Cop 3 is the pacing. This movie is awfully slow. There's a real lack of momentum to the plot. And the Uncle Dave character, if they'd used him more throughout, I think you might have cared about him a bit more.
Yeah. I like that Uncle Dave is willing to do these cloak and dagger midnight meetings.
I think he figures in the long run it's going to get him back in the company.
Well, the thing is, he ought to be like Stan Lee, where like he just keeps starting new ventures.
If the part had been played by Stan Lee, that could have been sort of funny.
Oh, that would have been great. "Hello, true believer. I'm Uncle Dave." I'm sorry, that's terrible. "Hello, true believer."
Oh, now
you see when Kirby and I...
There's some honest-to-God detective work. Turns out the note was written on the paper.
Generally, I can do a much better Stan Lee impersonation, but if I start, I do not stop. I just start making up stories about the creation of the Hulk.
What?
Uncle Dave is wearing a wire!
So, I mean, as far as villains go... Timothy Carhart as bad guy Ellis DeWald is okay. He has that sort of scumbag, rich guy tone down. But I don't think he's a villain you truly sort of hate. He's not as bad as as good as being a bad guy as the icy cold British guy. What is it, Victor Maitland from Beverly Hills Cop 1? And in the second film, the main bad guy was... oh, what's her name? The blonde from Rocky IV, Bridget Nielsen.
I like Bridget Nielsen, although I wish I had more brownie right now.
Are those legal brownies?
Well, no, no, they're perfectly legal. I made the other night. I made a big brownie out of this like rich chocolate fudge brownie mix with a big old scoop of peanut butter, white chocolate chips, coconut shavings. It was really, really loaded. It's fantastic. I was actually snacking on it when we started this audio commentary, but I've long since run out.
Sounds rich.
Oh, it is. It's quite good.
So Alex DeWall just killed Uncle Dave.
You know, he just, they were just next to a Beverly Hills mailbox. That immediately makes me think, oh, they could do a franchise of Beverly Hills Mailman. I mean, you could really do it with all sorts of public servants. Beverly Hills Comptroller, which is the most hilariously named public servant. That would be one.
Beverly Hills Parking Cop. Just gives out parking tickets.
Well, Beverly Hills Meter
Man. There you go. Beverly Hills Meter Man. You flip it, see?
Starring Martin Mull. Wonder World.
Again, even though it's an action scene, it's pretty low stakes and just, I don't know, you don't really care. It's not even a chase, really.
There is another Skywalker!
He has a bit of that Sebastian Shaw look to him, Uncle Dave. Oh.
Now, are we going to get a reaction shot of somebody going, Axel?
I'm sure.
Okay, now that's a bit of a better use of the Axel theme with horns.
Da, da, right da, 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 da. Yeah, a little faster paced. Hey, that's Uncle Dave's bleeding.
They stripped him fast, but that's good. I'm glad that they work quickly. Although what's really going to be awkward is when the person comes in trying to figure out whether Uncle Dave has health insurance.
A real funny joke is, what if they would have put Uncle Dave and cryogenically frozen him?
It's in his will.
Like the urban legend about Walt Disney.
Oh, yeah. That would have been a really bleak ending, because then at the end, like, they would have shown a big block of ice with Uncle Dave in it propped up in the Wonderworld entrance. Come see the real Uncle Dave!
Oh, that's not conspicuous, Axel. Walking with your hands in your pockets. Looking shifty-eyed.
Hey, it's chilly. Word gets around real fast.
Yeah.
This is like pre-saturation of the internet. Okay, what the fuck?
That's really creepy. It's a combination of a lion and a woman.
Yeah. A woman in like a not a corset, but like an old-timey, like, Edwardian blouse.
That set direct. Decorator had a sense of humor.
Hey, he has a full name.
Those are some film directors there at the bar.
Let's tune into the exposition already in progress.
Classic newscaster exposition.
It's like Andy Warhol in the background. I like that they don't have any, like, stock photos or footage of Uncle Dave. They just have stock footage of his little tribute at Wonderworld.
I should probably mention, they came out with a special edition DVD of Beverly Hills Cop 3 that has a neat sort of 20-minute documentary behind the scenes on it.
Cool.
Although the director, John Landis, doesn't speak, and Eddie Murphy doesn't speak about it. So perhaps that's telling.
Does it come with a Wonderbuck?
Does not come with a Wonderbuck. It also does not have a commentary from the director or something, which might have been interesting. But
well, you can't have that, but you can have this sequel cast commentary.
Yes, exactly. That's what we're here for. But Beverly Hills Cop 3 is not out on Blu-ray as of this recording, April 5th, 2012. But I imagine it's coming. Beverly Hills Cop 1 came out in Blu-ray. In the U.S.
No, that's not real amateur video, despite what the Chiron says. It's held way too steady.
And it would have had a lot more zoom had it been amateur video.
Okay, do you think these people are racist, assuming the very first black guy they see at the entrance to an establishment is the valet parking attendant?
Well, I mean, it is Beverly Hills.
I've twice in my whole life been to places that have had valet, like actually attended an establishment that had valet parking. The attendants, you can tell.
Yeah.
Like, they actually have, like, kind of a uniform. It'll often say valet on a name tag.
Here we go, the return of Serge, very briefly.
Was Serge in the middle of cooking? He's kind of got that stylish apron.
I don't know. That's an ugly apron. Gray, orange, and black.
It's haute couture. But why is he wearing an apron? What business was he up to? And so he's finally going to get the only gadget that he's ever presumably going to use.
No, he uses the keychain thing later.
Oh, I wanted to be surprised. But, I mean, I know I've seen this before, but I've blocked most of it from my memory. I wanted to be surprised.
And you know, lately, if there's going to be a Beverly Hills Cop movie on TV on Comedy Central, for some reason they've been showing Beverly Hills Cop 3 a lot. And I'm not sure why.
Because their standards have fallen.
Because that's the one that nobody wants to see and that has the least amount of comedy in it.
It's just one of those like shitty cost-benefit analysis things. It's so cheap to get the rights to air that any amount of advertising dollars is a significant profit, even if no one's actually watching. See, right then and there, I would have had the gun go off by accident.
And that's what we call a matte painting, kids. All right.
But it's not bad. I mean, I like matte painting. I mean, digital matte is great, but I really do appreciate the craftsmanship that goes into a matte painting. That's an awful lot of light for a closed amusement park.
Notice you have these after-hour scenes at night. That's why you don't have to have as many extras running around, being people that are in the park.
First aid? Commence counterfeiting, Mr. Sue.
But of course, have they said what they use the counterfeit bills for? Did they use them for something even more insidious, or are they just pocketing the money?
I would assume I haven't heard anything, any dialogue implying that it's anything other than to just have counterfeit bills, but I frankly don't know.
If there's something more insidious, that'd be kind of... Like, what if it turned out that Alex DeWald is actually kind of like a black sheep of Uncle Dave's family? It's like his long-lost son? I don't know.
He needs money to start his own media empire.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know. I assume it's just counterfeiting for the sake of counterfeiting.
I would have liked a bigger picture and nefarious thing. Here's the keychain, James Bond moment.
No accidental shootings, though.
You're a man, actually.
Although
you said
I challenge
fuck.
The usefulness.
Let's see how many more times you can say fuck before the movie's over. I bet it's a lot.
Well, I gotta say, I challenge the usefulness of that strobing keychain. It's just an omnidirectional blast of blinding light. That's going to fuck you. Since you're holding it, it's going to fuck you up just as much as it fucks up any assailant.
You know, it's like a low-budget version of that. Some of those Men in Black gadgets that makes you forget everything. Except it's a light, so it's nothing like that at all. So you get this room that sets off gas, I guess, to cool the film reels, I guess, to keep the temperature down if there's a fire.
Yeah, there are actually systems like that, like in a lot of server rooms, but also places where you want to do very high-tech media storage. If there's a fire, the room seals itself off, but it also gets flooded with an inert gas, so nothing will combust.
It's the coolant safety system.
Well, there you go, just like in Lifey. Although, why they have their main server in the Enchanted Forest, I don't know.
That's where they got all the other hidden technical equipment.
And just like in real life, if you shoot a control board, everything powers up. Even though earlier we saw that you had to have an attendant operating the rides, turns out they're all automatic.
Or you gotta have some kind of override, I guess. What if all the operators are sick?
The real sad part about this is, like, all sorts of craziness is now happening all in the amusement park, but here we are in this concrete room.
Yeah. I mean,
once the craziness starts, the action should immediately go to where everything's become chaotic.
Right. I mean, you know, a lot of, again, it belies the budget of this film. Half of this film either takes place in cars or in concrete rooms.
Now, why was there a tiny pane of glass over the access keypad?
I guess, like, do not break in case of emergency. I mean, another reason for that, they had to do that at some jobs I've been in before, and it's so people don't, like, accidentally bump the wires and things get unplugged by accident.
Okay.
To protect that. Meanwhile, the FBI is there, but they're not doing anything because they're eating free popcorn.
They should be suffocating. If this was inert gas and not just apparently Freon or something to cool the air. Because lowering the temperature does not stop a fire. You have to prevent combustion.
Could cut off the
oxygen.
That's
been a little lesson. That's a lesson in chemistry. You know what just occurred to me? That guy, he looks like an angry Carl Sagan.
Oh, but it's John Saxon. But those are quite a set of eyebrows he has. Quite a pair. So, I mean,
this will protect
I bet you that gun
moments.
Would realistically weigh at least 50 pounds if it had a 90s-era microwave CD player.
Nets never work, really. They don't work like they do in the movies. So all that setup...
No,
for that
you'll see.
For that weapon.
Punchline. Oh, it's the boombox button.
Sergei should have given him a manual. Okay, forgive me, we have another substance which is stopping bullets that shouldn't be able to stop bullets.
And they could be chasing each other through the park, have some motion in there, but just very stationary.
Now, do you think that's the real Jerry Lewis singing, or is that just a Jerry Lewis sound-alike?
I think it could be the real Jerry Lewis.
No, listen to the inflection. That's got to be a sound-alike.
Oh, there you go. One of the buttons shoots rockets.
Yeah, I can't imagine that gadget's too legal. Well, after a whole lot of shtick, it was kind of effective.
He just takes the regular pistol.
Now back to the car.
I think you'd still take the Annihilator with you, though, just in case.
Intimidation purposes.
Yeah. I wonder if they're going to die. The suspense is killing me.
So Rosewood can hack now, huh?
Yep.
Hack and crack.
The empty set of alien attack. Are you sure those aren't the real Cylon things?
No, those aren't. First,
it's more rounded, the helmet?
First, the real Cylons, the armor is much more jointed. Second, it's a solid red light which gently sweeps back and forth across the eyepiece rather than just, you know, those little sort of LEDs in there. Finally, that mouthpiece grill is actually much thinner on the Cylon. It has roughly the same width as a human nose. The Cylons are actually designed to reflect actual proportions. They're not just arbitrarily assigned like they are on those figures. Also, real Cylons, their chests don't light up.
Oh, I guess that guy died.
This is why you always observe safety. Okay, that's pretty brutal.
He just shot someone dead. Although, he did shoot and kill people in all the movies. I don't know why it's so surprising now.
Well, it's just that a guy's on fire on a ride. It's a bullet can give you a good clean death. Oh god! And some corpse puppetry.
Oh, Axel Foley, you always were the best with corpses. Oh! Wouldn't these security guys know how the rides work at their own park? Isn't that part of the orientation?
You'd hope they would. I mean, they were masters of it earlier. So apparently a more amazing action scene happened out here with an actual truck while he was messing with the truck in a ride.
And fire.
I'm pretty disappointed by that. I feel like a more amazing movie is happening around this guy. Yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, yeah, I think Beverly Hills Cop 3 is the B story in this guy's movie. We're just trapped in the B story.
Whoa.
Well, that's cruel, double breaking his nose.
Jeez, that's a bit rough, Axel. I guess he could have shot them in the kneecaps or something. That would have been worse.
He's using a lot of lethal force.
Now, is Axel illicit also, computers?
Well, he is now for the purposes of this story unfolding.
Meanwhile, his friend Billy Rosewood is freezing to death.
That is a high quality tarp there. And apparently, Happy Forest is a frozen caveman.
Oh, land of the dinosaurs, you see.
Not Time of the Dinosaurs. Land of the Dinosaurs. Oh, damn! That cart looks like the Time Machine from George Powell's adaptation of the H.G. Wells Time Machine.
It might be. Director John Landis likes to have a lot of old film references in his movies. He's a big film buff.
And I applaud him for that. I love that Robbie the Robot from Forbidden Planets is in Gremlins, along with the Time Machine from George Powell's adaptation of the Time Machine, which actually disappears between some scenes, implying that the Time Machine works. It's a great gag in Gremlins. I love it.
I do want to mention that the director of this, John Landis, you know, one thing he's done recently is, I'm not sure if he helps run the website, but he's one of the main people on it. There's a website called Trailers from Hell, where what they do is they take old movie trailers and then various film directors kind of do live commentary on the film trailer, giving film history tidbits, or in some cases their movies that they've worked on. And you can also watch the classic trailers without the commentary. And that's trailersfromhell.com. It's a real fun website. And John Landis, director of Beverly Hills Cop 3, does commentary and a bunch of trailers on there. So it's a lot of fun. Have you been there, Thrasher?
No, I haven't. I'm going to check it out now. I love those directors, and I love old-timey trailers and terrible trailers, but Matt, do you think this is a real ride that exists somewhere? Do you think that's a set, that whole Land of the Dinosaurs?
I think it's a set, but they could have just redressed an addition, an existing ride. I mean, I think they took all the dinosaurs out of the prop department.
So apparently all of Rosewood's hacking led him to throwing a chair through the window. Something he could have done 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Now, where did Axel get a picture of his face?
Kiss my ass.
I guess he took control of the visual matrix. Was he just shot 3 times at once? That is a sleepy T-Rex.
I mean, those are okay dinosaur-like things. This might have been a ride, actually, if it's something on a track. I don't think this movie would have had the budget to do a big thing like this from scratch.
Would you ever see those like animatronic dinosaur shows that would sometimes go to shopping malls?
It looks like those, yeah.
Yeah, and it looks exactly like those. Like, I honestly think that's where they filmed it. They found a mall that had one of those attractions, and they just filmed that. Although where that ice pit came from, I don't know. Mm.
So that's sort of a cute reference to the second one where Rosewood is spinning a gun around. Where
it's a nice moment.
And it's nice to see him get some action.
You know, I like that he is a crack shot and his head's in a bear crotch.
That's kind of a fun visual.
Now, what the hell is the triple play? Oh, I guess it's that wheelie thing. Never mind.
Sort of like the spider, but not. You know, I do want to say I hate amusement parks because I hate roller coasters and I hate heights. But I like the sort of, I don't know, the kind of decorated areas you go through, like Tom Sawyer's Island or whatever from Disney World.
Well, I've never been to an amusement park on the scale of Disneyland or Disney World, but I find the general hustle and bustle of compacted humanity there more interesting than a lot of the rides. That being said, the ride involves water, I'm there. log rides, like crazy rapid rides.
Oh no, I hate those. I hate
if it's a ride where I can get wet, I love it.
It's sort of the climax to the film. Kind of interesting. You got the smoke. I think at least visually, this part of the movie looks a bit more interesting. And you have Exo Foley getting shot. You had Rosewood getting shot earlier.
It's a good set piece. Uh-huh. I mean, they're taking advantage of having
for once
this fake jungle with dinosaurs.
Yeah.
At the same time, I do wish they're... I'm sure they can't do this, but I would love to see more physical interaction with them and the animatronic dinosaurs.
I wish I could track down an early copy of the screenplay, because originally it had a lot more involved set pieces with the rides. And, I mean, you know, believe it or not, the screenwriter on this film was Stephen E. D'Souza, who wrote the original Die Hard, who...
Oh, we already talked about that at the beginning of this record.
We did, but we didn't mention other stuff he wrote besides Die Hard. I mean, he really... Die Hard True. 2, some Tales from the Crypt, Judge Dredd, Commando, Running Man. I mean, a lot of stuff.
I like Running Man.
Yeah, it's a campy sort of fun.
Like, I honestly feel like there's a missed opportunity in this scene. We could have had the thug, like, stalking through this area trying to find Axel, and then have, like, a animatronic Triceratops burst out and impale the guy on his horns.
Right. It is a bit interesting to get injured and you see blood and stuff.
Yeah, any kind of like any kind of visual signifiers of the consequences of the violence, I really like.
And the idea of Axel Foley in an amusement park where both the security guards and the FBI are against him is sort of interesting. Well, plot twist. But you don't get a lot of suspense in there.
Wow, there's still 10 minutes more of this.
Keep in mind, a lot of that's the credits, but yeah.
I don't care. I still consider credits part of the movie.
Yep.
Same part way of the I commentary. Consider a signature part of a painting. The wiggling thing in the background is pretty distracting. And here comes a zombie.
Oh no, it's Judge Reinhold.
I like that kind of like Woody Allen klezmer take on the Axel thing going on right now.
If Woody Allen would direct Beverly Hills Cop, that's the rendition of the theme that would play over the opening credits.
As he's walking through the streets of New York.
Yeah.
What if they offered me the part of Axel Foley and I couldn't turn it down? And then he died of blood loss.
This is such a weird part.
Where the hell is the woman?
Touching each other's bloody wounds. Yeah, the woman isn't in much of the action scenes either, even though they sort of set her up half-heartedly as a romantic interest that never goes anywhere. And Uncle Dave has returned to the park. Our heroes are injured.
Yeah, I like that Uncle Dave has fully recovered from a nearly fatal stab wound.
Right.
But these three guys who got mostly superficial injuries are still
in thought he died for some reason, but he did not. See, they make the Axel Fox character in honor of him. Instead of the Mariachi
like
Fox,
that.
It's Axel Fox.
I think that's cute, but at the same time, I want to see like a bit of an Axel Fox cartoon. Like if they were clever,
they would have opened
this movie with like a little 5-minute Axel Fox short. There's another confetti is blocking all the action.
Oh, we get a sex joke at the end. She has a tunnel of love.
That she's talking about her vaginal.
Yep.
that's like a fuck you.
What? Eddie Murphy smiling?
Yeah, just like, you know, I got your money now. Like, it's just such that shit-eating grin. It is like a fuck you to the audience.
This whole movie's a fuck you. If you liked either of the first two Beverly Hills Cop, this one isn't really funny and doesn't have good action. It has like a cute 5-minute scene with Bronson Pinchot as Serge, but like there's like nothing else I like about this. Maybe the scene where he shows up Alex DeWald at the convention.
Yeah, Matt, but tell us what you really think about the movie.
I hate it. I don't like it. This movie almost made me stop the fucking sequel cast to begin with.
Yeah, this is the movie that nearly killed the show.
Three episodes in, yeah. Because I was getting
I'm
so...
I'm glad we like
depressed and upset. In the early episodes of the sequel cast, I would spend way too much time editing them to the point where I wasn't having fun doing the editing. And I don't know. You can, when you do editing, it's easy to spend too much time on that stuff. But yeah, it would have been nice to see bloopers or something in the end credits, but nope.
Yeah, that would have been fun, or some shtick, or like just like footage of Axel and Rosewood and the other guy, like just trying to have a good time at the amusement park.
What if they had a little joke scene where Axel Foley's talking to his lady friend, and they're about to make love, and she says, "No, I want you to put on the costume," and she points to the Axel Fox costume.
I would have liked to have seen that. I also would have liked to have just seen them having sex, especially with him in the cast. I also, especially, would have liked to have seen while the credits were going on off to the side, just Bronson Pinchot as Serge improvising an elaborate sales pitch for the Annihilator to the audience.
What if a scene of Bronson Pinchot as Serge and Judge Reinhold as Billy Rosewood having sex?
Yeah, I mean, it would be funny, but I wouldn't be all that interested. I like guy on girl. I like girl on guy. I like black on blonde. I like Asian on Turkish,
but not Serge on Rosewood.
Like girl and guy, guy girl guy, Oreo. I like a lot of combinations, but Reinhold on Serge, it just doesn't do anything.
Clashes. George Lucas plays disappointed man. Years later, when the Star Wars prequels came out, they'd be playing the part of disappointed fan.
I'm glad you made the joke before I did.
It's all too obvious.
Dave Thornton. Annihilator Girls. Heather Parker. Julie Strain! I knew I recognized her.
Julie Strain was one of the Annihilator Girls?
Yeah, yeah.
Star of porno films?
They're not porno. They're erotic thrillers. But yeah, Return to Savage Beach, Heavy Metal 2000, she is a modern warrior goddess. Oh, she also played herself hilariously and brilliantly in the remake of How to Make a Monster.
Now, is she still dating or married to Kevin Eastman?
Yeah, she's married
to him.
She's married to Kevin Eastman, co-creator of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Right, although he sold off his part to Peter Laird, and then now Peter Laird sold it all off to, I think, Nickelodeon or whatever.
Well, now Kevin Smith owns Metal Mammoth, and he's in charge of heavy metal now. He really, he brought that magazine out of what could have been its extinction.
Kevin Eastman?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's editor-in-chief. It's great, great magazine. I feel about heavy metal the same, a good issue of heavy metal the same way I feel about a good episode of SNL. It's three things you love and at least one thing you hate. But it's worth having.
That's not bad odds when you consider it. I mean, most episodes of SNL lately, I don't think it's very good anymore. But I've been saying that for quite a long time.
Well, that's generally whatever cast you came into adulthood watching,
yeah.
That's the cast you love, and everything after that you don't quite like. And I've seen that with every generation that's been exposed to the show around college age.
I mean, for me with SNL, and Eddie Murphy, of course, was on SNL for a few years there. Before his movie career took off.
Among others.
Now, has he guest starred on SNL recently, Eddie Murphy? I don't think he has.
Not recently, but no, I wouldn't mind seeing him host again. I mean, it's always great when they get an old cast member back to host, but I don't think he's had anything to do with the show since the 80s when he hosted, the last time I specifically remember him hosting, it was when he did another 48 hours. They were supposed to get his co-star, but he got the flu, so Eddie Murphy flew in and did it, like, at the last minute.
Yeah, you know, there's
You were promised one of the
If you like SNL, there was a really interesting book that came out called Live from New York, an Uncensored Oral History of Saturday Night Live, where it's, like, 600-something pages. They talk to almost everybody, except Eddie Murphy is one person that wouldn't agree to be talked to for the book.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think he's really I think he's divorced himself from the show. A Tribe Called Quest. Love for Them Gangsters by Kevin Shacky Carter and Dr. Jam. Performed by EZ.
More, some R&B, some rap on the soundtrack.
Oh my gosh, the North Dakota, South Dakota! That is Jerry Lewis! Wow!
That was. at that.
All right, respect. Jimmy Jam and Jerry Lewis.
I don't remember this much music in the movie, but...
Yeah, it must have been hell to get all this stuff licensed.
One of these people the filmmakers were thanking are John Landis's kids, Rachel and Max. His son is Max Landis, who recently wrote a movie called... Chronicle?
Yeah.
Goddamn,
yeah.
With the superhero stuff, right? They're supposed to be pretty good.
Yeah, the found footage superhero movie. Yeah.
Spectral Recording, Dolby Stereo SR. I don't know what that is.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that has been Beverly Hills Cop 3. No animals were harmed in making this movie, but these two commentators were.
Ouch, yeah. I hope the movie... If you watch this with the movie, or listen to us as you're watching the movie, it helped the movie go by a little bit faster.
Don't avoid the movie, just watch it with our commentary together.
Or even listening to the commentary apart from the movie, I think, would be better than watching the movie, even though you'd be really confused.
All right.